5 minutes later, with the kid's outfit back in the carpet bag, wearing an expensive dressing gown, Conrad Browning knocked on Pamela's door.
Who is it?
Conrad. Are you all right, Pamela?
Of course. Why wouldn't I be?
No reason. I just wanted to check on you before I turned in.
I'm fine, Conrad. It's sweet of you to be so thoughtful.
Well, I'll say goodnight then. Again.
Goodnight, Conrad.
She closed the door behind him as he turned toward his room. It had been a violent, eventful day. He was tired. After a restless night with too many of the familiar nightmares, he'd awakened in the morning, dressed, and went along the hall to Pamela's room. She answered his knock immediately.
How are you?
Fine. I slept better than I have in weeks, thanks to you.
Are you ready for some breakfast?
Oh, yes. And then what are we going to do?
She came out into the hall and closed the door behind her. Conrad took her arm and led her toward the stairs.
We're going to the general store, as I mentioned last night. And once we've taken care of that, we'll go to the train station and see about getting you a ticket on the next eastbound train.
You mean I'm leaving?
There's no reason for you to stay here, now that you're free of your uncle and his gunmen.
But you're here.
Not for long.
You're going to confront Uncle Anthony?
Conrad realized he had said too much. Pamela wasn't stupid. Her eyes widened with understanding when he didn't reply.
You've already gone after him, haven't you? Conrad, did you kill him?
I didn't see your uncle. I found the hotel where you'd been staying, but he and his men were already gone.
He didn't see any point in telling her about the shootout with Vicente. With any luck, he could get her out of Valverde before she even heard about that. He hoped there would be an eastbound train coming through today.
But you're going to try to find him, aren't you? You won't rest until you track him down.
He's responsible for Rebel's death. You don't think I can just forget about that, do you? Not to mention the fact that he held you prisoner and threatened to kill you, too.
Pamela dismissed that with a wave of her hand.
Uncle Anthony may have threatened me, but he never would have really hurt me. At least I don't believe he would have.
What about those gunmen working for him? If something had happened to him, how do you think they would have treated you?
Her face paled as she considered that possibility.
You're right. Still, you're no match for those men. I don't mean to offend you, Conrad dear, but you're simply not.
Conrad dear. It had been a long time since she had called him that. The term must have slipped out from habit, since any romance between them was long since over.
If you're bound and determined to see this through, you should at least get your father's help. Send for Frank Morgan, and stay here until he arrives, Conrad.
I'll handle this as I see fit.
You always were an infuriatingly stubborn man. Very well. At least if you insist on getting yourself killed, I won't have any part of it. I'm grateful to you for that, anyway.
With that new air of tension between them, they went downstairs and into the dining room. They didn't talk much during the meal. Conrad was lingering over his coffee while Pamela finished her food when pounding hoofbeats in the street outside caught his attention. He looked up, glancing through the front window in time to see a wagon race in front of the hotel, careening along, barely under control. Unless Conrad was mistaken, Rory McTavish was at the reins, slashing the team with the lines and urging them on. Conrad came quickly to his feet. Pamela saw the look of alarm on his face.
What is it? What's wrong?
I don't know, but Rory McTavish just drove by in the family's wagon, whipping the horses for all they're worth.
That doesn't have anything to do with you.
I know, but they treated me well.
Only because you helped them?
Conrad started for the dining room door. He knew, logically, that she was right, that whatever trouble had befallen the McTavishes now, it was none of his affair. He had responsibilities of his own, such as tracking down Anthony Tarleton. But once again, he couldn't help but think that Rebel would want him to help if he could. He strode quickly through the lobby and out of the hotel. The wagon had come to a stop down the street in front of one of the houses. The youngster's bright red hair was unmistakable. Rory had hopped down from the seat and was at the back of the wagon, watching anxiously as several men lifted someone from the wagon bed. As Conrad hurried closer, he saw that the man being taken from the vehicle was Hamish McTavish. A bloody bandage was wrapped around Hamish's midsection. Conrad saw a sign hanging on a post in the front yard, announcing that the house was where Dr. Edward Churchill practiced medicine. The townsman who had responded to Rory's frantic calls for help carried Hamish up onto the porch, where a middle-aged man with gray hair waited.
Take him inside and put him on the bed in the front room.
The townies disappeared into the house with their burden. Rory would have followed, but Conrad had caught up to him. He stopped the boy with a hand on the shoulder.
Rory, what happened?
Pa's been shot!
I could see that.
Conrad took hold of Rory's other shoulder.
Who did it?
I don't know. They attacked the place in the middle of the night, shooting and yelling. They set the barn on fire. Pa and James ran out to try and stop them, but Pa got hit.
What about James? Was he hurt?
Not then. I don't know about now.
How about Margaret?
Maggie's gone.
Conrad resisted the impulse to shake the boy. Rory was so scared and upset it was a wonder he was making any sense at all. Still, Conrad had to find out exactly what had happened before he could start figuring out what to do about it.
Listen to me, Rory. Listen to me. You have to tell me what happened. Take a deep breath and start at the beginning.
Well, it was the middle of the night, like I said. When the shooting started, we looked out and saw that the barn was on fire. Pa told me to stay inside with Maggie. He and James ran outside and started shooting at the men. Pa was hit and James dragged him behind the smokehouse. That was the closest cover. Some of the men charged the dugout. I couldn't stop them. And neither could James. They got inside and I thought for sure they was gonna kill me. But one of them just walloped me and knocked me out. I heard Maggie screaming and when I came to, she was gone. James said they dragged her out and took her with them.
Horror filled Conrad. Another innocent young woman carried off by killers. It made him sick to think about it.
James tried to stop them, but there was too many of them. He had to duck back behind the smokehouse to just keep him from filling him full of lead. As it was, he got creased a couple times.
You said the men came into the dugout. Did you get a good look at any of them?
Not really, but we hadn't lit any lamps, so it was dark in there. And I think they had bandanas over their faces. But they were Devil Dave's men. Uh-huh, they had to be. Nobody else around here would have done such a terrible thing.
As far as Conrad knew, Rory was right about that. Whitfield was the only real enemy the McTavish family had. Whitfield and Jack Trace had been forced to back down here in Val Verde the day before. That would have eaten at them, especially the arrogant gunman Trace. Conrad could easily imagine Trace talking Whitfield into the raid on the McTavish ranch.
What happened after that?
We had to take care of Pa. We carried him back in the dugout and we stopped the bleeding as best as we could and we bandaged him up. Then James said he was going after Maggie and for me to bring Pa to town and get him to the dock. So that's what I did.
James went after the men who raided your place. By himself.
Yeah. There was nobody else to help us.
The words didn't carry any tone of accusation, but Conrad felt a twinge of guilt anyway. He wished he could have been there to lend a hand to the McTavishes. But he'd had plenty of trouble on his own plate the night before.
You said you didn't get a good look at the men. How did James know where to go? Or did he wait and follow their trail this morning?
No, sir. He left before sunup. He was going straight to the Circle D. He said he knew that's where he would find Maggie.
If that were true, then Whitfield and his men, including Trace, were probably waiting for James McTavish. James might be dead by now, shot to pieces by Trace and the rest of Whitfield's gun wolves. But maybe, just maybe, there was a chance James was still alive.
You go on inside now. I'm sure the doctor will take care of your father to the best of his ability.
You look like you're gonna do something, Mr. Browning.
I am. I'm going out to Whitfield's ranch and do whatever I can to help your brother. If your sister is there, we'll get her back. You have my word on that, Rory.
After getting directions to the Circle D from Rory, Conrad headed back to the hotel. He saw Pamela waiting on the porch for him.
What's happened?
Hamish McTavish has been shot, and his daughter Margaret was kidnapped.
Dear Lord! I'm sorry to hear about that. You're not going after her, are you?
I am.
Conrad, you should leave this to the law. It's not your place to go chasing after a bunch of... Oh, my God, it's almost like...
That's right. Margaret McTavish doesn't deserve what's happening to her any more than Rebel did.
But you're not married to this McTavish girl. I understand why you feel sorry for her, but it's not your responsibility to go off and get killed trying to help her.
I'm not going to get killed.
Can you guarantee that?
There are no guarantees in life, Pamela. You know that.
All too well. I once thought my happiness was guaranteed, but look how that turned out.
Conrad turned away, There was nothing he could do to change the past.
I'm sorry, I can't see about putting you on an eastbound train. I'm sure you can handle that for yourself.
Of course. I'm used to doing things for myself now. I had to learn when I lost my father and my fiancé.
Conrad refused to give in to the guilt she was trying to make him feel. He strode into the hotel and headed up the stairs. He left Valverde a short time later in the buggy. The hostler at the livery stable had tied the buckskin behind the vehicle as Conrad requested. He didn't know if he'd need the saddle horse or his other clothes, but he'd be ready if he did. Dave Whitfield's spread was east of the McTavish place. Conrad veered in that direction when he passed a spire of rock that split about halfway up, the first landmark Rory had told him. He followed the directions the boy had given him, and after a couple of hours, he knew he ought to be getting close to the Circle V. It had been hours since James McTavish had ridden over there. Conrad had a bad feeling that whatever was going to happen had already happened. Because of that pessimism, he was a little surprised a short time later when he heard gunshots popping in the distance. There was a chance James McTavish was still alive. There was no time to waste. Conrad knew he was on Circle D range by now. He came to a narrow creek that twisted through some rolling hills. According to Rory, if he followed it, it would lead him to the ranch headquarters. Conrad sent the buggy up a rise. It sounded like some of the shots were coming from just over the crest. As he topped the rise, he was already reining in, hauling the big black to a halt. He reached down and plucked the Winchester from the floorboards as he caught sight of a cloud of powder smoke hanging over a cluster of boulders. Someone in there was firing at a number of buildings spread out along the creek about 200 yards down the hill. Conrad had no doubt the hidden rifleman was James McTavish. He also knew that James was in more trouble than he realized. A group of riders had just burst from some trees along the rise to the right and were about to close in on James from that direction. Conrad leaped from the buggy and ran to a nearby pine tree. He leaned against the trunk and brought the rifle to his shoulder. As the horsebackers opened fire on the boulders, Conrad began squeezing off shots in their direction. He aimed in front of the galloping riders. As the bullets began to kick up dust, the men instinctively yanked on their horses' reins in surprise. One of the animals got its legs tangled and went down, spilling its rider. The man's companions had to swerve wildly around him to prevent their mounts from trampling him. As the riders became aware that the man in the boulders wasn't alone, some of them turned their guns toward Conrad. He ducked behind the tree as bullets chewed pine bark from the trunk, which wasn't really wide enough to protect him. Luckily, James McTavish, or whoever was in the boulders, took advantage of the opportunity to throw some lead toward the men on horseback. As that blunted their charge even more, Conrad dashed behind the rocks. Sure enough, James was the man who was holed up there. He glanced at Conrad.
What the hell? You again?
Then he cranked the lever of his Winchester and continued firing at the riders, who were trying to circle around the boulders to get a better shot at him and Conrad. Conrad crouched behind one of the rocks and joined James in peppering Whitfield's men. He assumed they were from the Circle V. Under the circumstances, he couldn't think of anybody else who'd be trying to kill James. The riders broke off their attack and wheeled their horses, heading back into the trees. Two men in the boulders were considerably harder to root out. The gunman had been taking advantage of the fact that James wasn't able to fire in two directions at once. Now Conrad could cover his back.
Looks like they're gonna give us a little breathing room.
James lowered his rifle.
Maybe you'll have time to tell me what in blazes you're doing here, Browning.
Saving your sorry hide from the looks of it. It was a damn fool stunt taking on Whitfield and all of his men by yourself. Don't you think your family deserves better than to have you commit suicide that way?
I'm still alive and fighting, ain't I?
Yes, but you might not be by now if I hadn't shown up when I did to give you a hand.
You don't know that. Wait, if you're out here, you must have seen Rory in town. Is my pa still alive?
He was when they carried him into Dr. Churchill's house, but that was a couple of hours ago.
He was hit bad. I didn't know if he'd even make it to town.
Conrad nodded toward the bloody bandages tied around James's upper left arm and right thigh.
Rory told me you were wounded too.
These are nothing but scratches. They didn't stop me from riding over here and having a showdown with Dave Whitfield.
I see that you're holed up in these rocks and you don't have your sister with you.
The bastards claim they don't have her. They say they don't know anything about the raid on our ranch last night. The lying sons of bitches.
Conrad risked a look. He didn't see anyone moving around down there.
while we've got a chance, why don't you tell me what happened this morning? To be honest, I figured I'd find you dead when I got here. I thought you'd go riding in with guns blazing and get yourself shot to pieces.
I reckon that's what would have happened. If I was the idiot you make me out to be. I knew these rocks have a good view of Whitfield's place. I hid up here, waited until one of his hired killers was walking outside, and plugged the no-good bastard.
You murdered a man from ambush?
Hell no. I just winged him. I'm a damn good shot.
What did that accomplish?
It got their attention, didn't it? When some other hombres ran out to see what the shooting was about, I made them dance by putting bullets around their feet. They ducked back into cover mighty quick-like. Every time one of them stuck his head out after that, I parted his hair for him. They could see I meant business. Once the fella I'd wounded had crawled back inside the barn, I hollered down to Whitfield and told him to let Maggie go. I'd keep him bottled up there and pick him off one by one.
And Whitfield claimed he didn't have Margaret.
That's right. What kind of damn fool does he take me for? Who else could have carried her off?
That was a good question, but Conrad was starting to wonder if there might not be an answer to it.
When those men raided your ranch last night, did you get a good look at any of them?
Not really. I was too busy ducking bullets and trying to kill some of the bastards.
Then you didn't recognize any of them as being Whitfield's men?
No. But who the hell else could it have been?
So Whitfield claimed he and his men didn't attack your ranch and didn't kidnap your sister.
That's what I just said, ain't it?
Did he offer to let you come down there and take a look around so you could see for yourself that Margaret's not there?
As a matter of fact, he did. But I knew it was a trick, so I told him to go to hell. They would have blown me to pieces the second I stepped out into the open.
Unfortunately, that might have been true, since James had shot down one of Whitfield's men from ambush. Conrad closed his eyes for a second and tried not to sigh in exasperation. James's mule-headed refusal to admit that he might have jumped to the wrong conclusion had done more harm than good. Plus, it had been stupid of him in the first place to come charging over here alone when Whitfield had a whole crew of tough cowboys and hired gunmen. Taking them by surprise had given James a momentary advantage and kept him alive that long, but it wasn't going to last. Probably, at that very moment, more of Whitfield's men were trying to circle around and get the drop on him. And he had plunked himself right down in that same boat, Conrad realized. He and James were trapped there. A fresh volley of shots from the ranch headquarters reinforced that point. All Conrad and James could do was keep their heads down and hope that none of the slugs found them. As Conrad crouched there, he realized that this barrage might have another goal besides just possibly killing him. Whitfield could be trying to distract them so that some of his men could sneak up on the rocks and capture them. No sooner had that thought gone through Conrad's mind than the guns abruptly fell silent.
Look out, James! They're going to rush us!
Suddenly, a man bounded on top of one of the boulders and launched himself in a flying tackle at James. Both men went down. Before Conrad could react, a heavy body collided with his and smashed him back against the rock. Conrad realized he'd dropped his gun. He swung wild with his right fist. The punch rocked the man back a step and knocked his hat off. Conrad got a good look at his face and recognized him as one of the men who'd been with Whitfield and Valverde the day before. Although still shaken and breathless, Conrad brought his left fist around. A hard crossing blow jerked his opponent's head the other way. He hooked a right into the man's belly, doubling him over. The man was in perfect position for a left uppercut, but Conrad didn't get the chance to throw it. All three of them sprawled on the ground. Conrad was on the bottom, the weight of both his enemies crushing. Suddenly, some of that weight disappeared as James threw one of the bad guys off. Using his hands and knees, Conrad heaved himself to the side and threw off the man who had tackled him. Conrad rolled into the open. As he looked up, he saw half a dozen men surrounding him and James. They had no chance against numbers like that. The smart thing would be to surrender and hope that Whitfield's men wouldn't kill them. That was his best chance of surviving in order to continue his quest for vengeance against Anthony Tarleton. Unfortunately, in the heat of battle, Conrad wasn't thinking that much about being smart. He was filled with anger. Anger at Whitfield and the McTavishes for their damned feud, at the men who were closing in to pound and stomp him into submission, and at himself for getting mixed up with this mess to start with. Fury burst out of him as he surged up off the ground and waded into his enemies, swinging punches left and right. Ah! Aching and battered, blood dripping from his mouth and nose, swaying with exhaustion, Conrad found himself still on his feet with four men sprawled on the ground around him, stunned and only semi-conscious. James McTavish was still upright too, having accounted for two more of the men. He stared at Conrad.
My God, man. Where do you learn to fight like that?
Conrad didn't have the time to explain that to James. Instead, he started looking around for his gun.
More of Whitfield's men will be here any minute.
No, Browning. We're already here.
Conrad looked up and saw Jack Trace standing about 20 feet away, along with half a dozen more of Whitfield's hired guns. All of them had their revolvers drawn and leveled at Conrad and James.
I didn't expect to see you, but I've got to admit, I'm glad you're here. Whitfield told us to bring McTavish back alive, but he didn't say a damn thing about you, Browning. And there's nothing I'd like better than an excuse to put a bullet in you, you son of a bitch.
If you shoot me now, Trace, we'll never know which one of us is faster, will we?
I know, damn you! No fancy-pants Easterner can outdraw me!
Take it easy, Trace. Maybe we'd better take both of them down to the ranch house and let the boss decide what to do with them.
Trace's head jerked toward the man, and for a second, Conrad thought Trace was gonna swing the gun around and pull the trigger. The man who had spoken up thought that too, because his face went pale under his tan.
Fine. Take him down. Just don't ever cross me again.
The men surrounded Conrad and James and gathered up their guns. Then they prodded the two unarmed men down the hill from the rocks toward the ranch house.
Where's my sister?
You mean that pretty little redhead? I don't have any idea, but I know where I'd like her to be. Right there in my bunk, with all that red hair spread out on my jaw.
James, that's just what he wants you to do. Whitfield told him to take you alive, but that won't stop Trace from blowing your knee apart.
You're a smart man, Browning. Too smart for your own good, I reckon.
As they neared the ranch house, the front door opened and Dave Whitfield stepped out onto the porch, trailed by several of his men. All of them held rifles. From the set of the rancher's slab-like jaw, Conrad knew that Whitfield's rage was barely contained. Trace signaled for everyone to stop.
McTavish! As soon as I heard the first shot, I knew it was one of you damn squatters causing trouble again.
We are not squatters! We own our spread free and clear! Paw saved for years to buy the land from the government.
I've used that range for years.
The open range days are over, Whitfield. You're intelligent enough to know that.
Just cause some fella in Santa Fe or Washington says something don't mean that's the way it ought to be.
I couldn't agree with you more. Unfortunately, the law doesn't see things that way. Nor does it condone kidnapping.
Damn it, if you're talking about Maggie McTavish, I don't have her. I never did.
You lie!
Whitfield's big, calloused hands tightened on the rifle he held. For a second, Conrad thought that James had pushed the cattleman too far. Whitfield looked like he was about to use the gun. Then, with a visible effort, Whitfield controlled his anger.
Listen to me, McTavish. Get this through your thick, dumb skull. I didn't kidnap your sister. I don't know where she is.
What about your men? You claimed you didn't send them over to the McTavish spread with dynamite the other night. Couldn't some of the men have raided the place and carried off the girl without telling you about it?
Not damn likely.
But not impossible.
Whitfield glared at Conrad for a moment, then turned to one of the men on the porch with him.
Ramsey, you control the crew. Any of them unaccounted for?
Nope. I know where each and every one of them is, boss. And they didn't kidnap no gal. Last night nor any other night.
That's just the ranch crew your man's talking about, Whitfield. What about the hired guns? They'd be the ones more likely to have carried out such a raid.
What about it, Jack?
We were right here on the ranch all night, Mr. Whitfield. Normally, I wouldn't mind lying to trash like McTavish, but in this case, it's the God's honest truth.
There you go. I believe my man. Now I got half a dozen injured men because you flew off the handle, McTavish. What are you gonna do about that?
What am I gonna do? I'm gonna tell you all to go to hell. You're lying, and one way or another, I'll prove it.
James, shut up.
Conrad stepped forward, ignoring the startled glare that James gave him.
Listen to me, Whitfield. If your men are telling the truth, then you shouldn't object to helping us prove that they didn't kidnap Margaret McTavish and shoot Hamish.
Hamish is hurt?
That's right. He was wounded during the attack on his ranch.
How bad?
I don't know. Rory took him to Valverde in a wagon. Some of the men from town carried him into the doctor's house. That's the last I saw of him. That's how I found out what had happened at the McTavish place, and when Rory told me that James had ridden over here, I figured I'd better see if he was all right.
You got a bad habit of sticking your nose where it ain't wanted, Browning.
I didn't ask him to help me.
How many men attacked your place last night?
I don't know. It was dark. 8 or 10, I'd say. Maybe 12.
That many riders will have left tracks. I suggest we ride over there and have a look around. Maybe we can follow them and find the men who took Margaret.
Whitfield lowered his rifle and rubbed his jaw. He appeared to be considering Conrad's suggestion.
Careful, boss. These damn Easterners could be trying to trick you.
I don't see how it could be much of a trick, considering there's only 2 of them and more than 20 of us. Of course, I wouldn't take all the crew along. Just you and maybe 4 or 5 of your men. That's still plenty to handle these two.
What if Browning's trying to lead you into a trap?
Who's left to spring it? Hamish McTavish is hurt. We got this boy and the other one's just a kid.
What about the other little ranchers round here?
I haven't had any trouble with those greasy sack outfits. They're all too scared to go against me. Those damn Scottishers were the only ones with gumption enough to rustle my stock.
We're wasting time arguing. We can settle the matter of Margaret's kidnapping by picking up the trail of the men who took her.
You're right. Pick 5 of your men, Jack, and get your horses saddled. We'll ride to the McTavish place.
Well, I still think it's a...
Trace stopped himself when he saw the hard look that Whitfield gave him. Devil Dave was used to having his orders obeyed without question, Conrad thought. Trace went off to see about getting his men ready to ride.
My rig is at the top of the hill. My saddle horse is tied on behind it.
I'll have a man bring it down. What about you, McTavish? Where's your horse?
Up there in the trees, too. Probably not far from where Browning left his buggy.
All right, I'll see to it.
Whitfield started to turn away, and then paused.
For what it's worth, I hope we find your sister and that she's all right. I don't make war on women.
Bullets don't distinguish between the sexes. Neither does dynamite.
Whitfield scowled. Maybe he knew he had allowed this feud with the McTavishes to get out of hand. Maybe he'd do something about it in the future. Conrad would believe that when he saw it, though. Old-time cattlemen like Whitfield were sometimes too set in their ways ever to change. A few minutes later, one of Whitfield's punchers drove Conrad's buggy down the hill to the ranch headquarters. Another Circle D cowboy led James's horse. Conrad got the saddle from the buggy and put it on the buckskin. The Winchester went into the saddle boot. Reluctantly, he left the Sharps behind. One of Whitfield's men saddled the rancher's horse and led it out. Whitfield had gone back into the house for a few minutes. He came out with saddlebags draped over his shoulder.
We may be on a trail for several days before we catch up to the varmints. I told my cook to put some supplies on a pack horse for us.
Good idea.
Whitfield gave him a sour look that said he didn't care if Conrad agreed with him or not. Trace and 5 more of the hard-faced gun wolves rode out of the barn. Conrad didn't like the idea of being accompanied by the hired killers. He didn't trust Trace or any of the other men. He barely trusted Dave Whitfield. As long as Whitfield was paying their wages, though, Conrad thought the rancher could keep Trace and the others in line. Conrad and the others mounted their horses, and they left the ranch and headed for the McTavish place. It was nearing midday, and the sun was high and hot overhead. Conrad took off his coat. It took more than an hour to reach their destination. Conrad spotted the charred rubble of the burned-out barn before he saw the dugout that served as the family's home.
Better slow down. We don't know which way the kidnappers went. We don't want to trample right over their tracks.
What are you, some kind of scout?
I know a little about tracking.
Browning's right.
Whitfield reined his horse back to a walk. The others did likewise.
Keep your eyes open.
He looked over at James.
You see which way they went when they left your ranch?
East. Straight toward your ranch.
Have you seen their tracks going in that direction? The only hoof prints I've seen are the ones you left when you went galloping off half-cocked to the Circle D.
Whitfield's right, James. We haven't come across the tracks of a large group of riders like the bunch that attacked your ranch.
Well, then who else could have done it?
Whitfield suddenly pulled his horse to a stop.
Look there.
Whitfield leveled an arm and pointed. The rest of the group followed his lead and reined in as well. Conrad leaned forward in the saddle and studied the ground. He could see the marks left behind by numerous riders who had come along there. The tracks curved off to the southwest.
Would you look at that?
Whitfield glanced at James.
A bunch of men on horseback headed east from your ranch.
then started circling back to the southwest less than a mile later. Hell, boy, if you just opened your ears, you'd have heard him swinging around this way.
I was too busy trying to stop my paw from bleeding where he'd been shot.
But not by me or any of my men. You were dead wrong. He came over to my spread and started shooting, wounding my men, and just generally raising hell, and you had the whole thing wrong.
I don't know that.
Whitfield flung a hand toward the tracks.
There's your damn proof right there.
All that proves is that they turned southwest. We don't know if they kept going that way.
There's an easy way to find out.
Yeah.
Whitfield heeled his horse into motion again.
Come on.
The trail continued to lead southwest, circling completely around the McTavish Ranch. The landscape became flatter and more arid. Conrad knew they wouldn't have to ride much farther south to reach the Mexican border, although the way the trail curved, they would still be on American soil the rest of the day. Some low but rugged-looking mountains appeared on the horizon. Whitfield signaled for everyone to halt.
Looks like the varmints are heading for the hatchets. Have you about got it through your head, McTavish, that me and my men ain't responsible for what happened?
Maybe. Maybe not. If you really took Maggie, you're going to pretty long lengths to convince me you didn't.
You're the stubbornest fool I ever run across. I don't take kindly to being called a liar, and that's what you called me right to my face. You're going to see that I was telling the truth, and when you do, you're going to apologize, or you and me are going to have even more trouble than we've had so far.
Your men have murdered my brother, and maybe my father, and tried to blow up our home. How much more trouble do you intend to cause, Whitfield?
Whitfield just shook his head and turned away. He and James might have called a truce, but Conrad wasn't sure there would ever be any real peace between them. The men pushed on a short time later. By the time the sun had lowered toward the western horizon, the Hatchet Mountains didn't look much closer. Conrad and his companions had to make camp and wait until morning to push on, or else risk losing the trail in the dark. He nudged the buckskin up alongside Whitfield's mount.
Don't you think you can give James and me our guns back now?
You maybe. I don't reckon you're the sort to go off half-cocked, but I'm not putting a gun back in that boy's hands just yet.
Conrad shrugged. He was willing to accept a partial victory, as long as it meant that he would have his colt again. Anyway, there was something else on his mind.
Does it seem to you that we didn't have much trouble picking up and following this trail?
You mean it's almost like they want us to follow them?
Exactly.
Yeah, that thought crossed my mind. But it's pretty hard to cover up a trail out here.
Not really. We've passed several rocky stretches where they could have veered off and not left any tracks for a while if they wanted to.
What are you getting at, Browning? You think we're riding into a trap?
Could be.
Why would anybody think that grabbing Maggie McTavish would make me follow her? I ain't exactly a friend of the family, and everybody in these parts knows that.
Maybe it's not you they baited the trap for. Maybe it just happened to work out that way.
What the hell does that mean?
Before Conrad had to decide whether to answer or not, Jack Trace spurred up to the front of the group too, flanking Whitfield on the right.
I got news for you, boss. While we've been following these tracks, somebody's been following us.
Whitfield reined in sharply and hipped around in the saddle.
What the hell are you talking about?
Conrad twisted to look back too, but he didn't see anything behind them except a semi-arid wilderness.
It's just one man as far as I can tell. He's staying pretty far back too, but he's there. I seen him a couple times this afternoon.
Remember what we were just talking about, Whitfield?
One man don't make a trap.
What's this about a trap?
Trace's right hand drifted toward his gun.
If you've double-crossed us, Browning...
Take it easy. Take it easy. I haven't double-crossed anybody. Whitfield and I were just talking about how it seems like this trail has been pretty easy to follow.
You're right about that. I reckon it could be a trap. Not much of one, though, if there's only one hombre following us.
We don't know what's up ahead.
I don't care. My sister's up there somewhere, and I'm not stopping until I have her back safe and sound.
Conrad hoped that was the way it turned out. He had worried ever since they picked up the trail that they might find Maggie McTavish's body lying used and broken in some gully. So far, that hadn't happened. He felt a twinge every time James blustered about saving Maggie. He had been full of the same confidence and resolve back there in Carson City when Rebel was kidnapped. Just because that situation had ended in tragedy, it didn't mean this one had to, Conrad reminded himself.
Why don't the rest of you push on toward the mountains and find a place to camp? I'll split off from the group, circle back around, and see if I can jump whoever is following us. If I can get my hands on him, that might give us some answers.
How do we know you won't just go running back to Val Verde?
I didn't have to come with you, remember? I didn't have to get mixed up in this mess at all. I'm here to help save Margaret, that's all.
Unless you're working with whoever's back there, and the two of you are gonna ambush us once we make camp.
Jack's got a point there, Browning.
No, he doesn't. I don't know who's back there any more than you do. It's certainly not anyone I'm in cahoots with, because I don't have any friends or partners in this part of the country.
Yeah, I reckon that makes sense. And your idea's a good one. I'd like to know who's trailing us too, but I'd feel better about it if Jack went with you.
I reckon I could do that.
Conrad was about to object when Whitfield moved his horse closer and reached into his saddlebag to pull out a Colt Peacemaker. Conrad recognized it as his gun.
Don't get any ideas, Jack.
Whitfield held out the revolver to Conrad, but first.
You've been a good hand for me, but I don't cotton to murder.
Furthest thing from my mind, Dave.
Conrad checked the loads in the Colt and then pouched the iron. He met Trace's look with a cold, level stare of his own.
I'm ready when you are.
Lead the way, dude, since you know what you're doing and all.
Conrad wheeled the buckskin and started back along the trail they'd been following. He swung off to the right, recalling that he had seen an arroyo in that direction as they passed it a short time earlier. He didn't look back to see if Trace was coming with him, but he could hear the hoofbeats of the gunman's horse. When Conrad reached the arroyo, he followed it until he came to a place where the bank had caved in, allowing him to ride down into the defile. Trace followed right behind him. As the two men rode along the sandy floor of the arroyo, Trace moved up alongside Conrad.
I'm curious about something, Browning.
Everybody's curious about something, I suppose.
Take it easy. You don't have anything to worry about. I'm not going to shoot you in the back or even try to get you to throw down with me.
Because out here there's no one to see it?
Damn right. When I outdraw you and kill you, I want plenty of folks around watching, so they'll know I'm faster than you. And tell all their friends they were there when Jack Trace killed the son of Frank Morgan.
Be more impressive if you killed Frank Morgan.
Hell, I know that. But I'll get to that. You'll do for now. What I want to know is, how'd you get to be so fast as you are? Some of it you must have inherited from your old man, but I got a hunch you've been practicing, Browning, trying to impress your pa.
Whatever is between my father and myself is none of your business, Trace. I'll advise you to keep your questions to yourself.
Sure. Anyway, I reckon I got my answer.
Conrad wanted to smash the smugness out of the gunman, but that could wait. Rescuing Maggie McTavish came first, and then dealing out some long-delayed justice to Anthony Tarleton. Trace's goading was just an annoyance compared to those two things. A potentially dangerous annoyance, to be sure.
Answer something for me.
Sure. We're pards now. We don't have to have any secrets from each other.
Are you the one who killed Charlie McTavish?
He came in talking big about how the boss was lying when he said the McTavishes were rustlers. I told him that if he believed in what he was saying, he wouldn't mind backing it up with some lead. He slapped leather.
Never had a chance against you, did he?
Not one damn chance in the world.
Conrad nodded. It was just as he had thought. Even though legally the shooting was a case of self-defense because Charlie McTavish had reached for his gun first, to Conrad it was cold-blooded murder. And sooner or later, Trace would have to answer for it. He'd just have to wait his turn. When they had followed the arroyo for about half a mile, Conrad reined in where the bank sloped enough so a man could climb it without much trouble.
Let's take a look. We ought to be able to see whoever it is following the others when he rides past this spot.
Both men took their hats off and climbed up the side of the arroyo. They edged their heads above the rim and peered out across the mostly flat landscape. At first, Conrad didn't see anything out of the ordinary. Then movement caught his eye. He honed in on it and saw a rider moving from right to left, paralleling the arroyo about 500 yards away.
There he is. Wish I had a good pair of field glasses.
Conrad's eyes were quite keen, but at that distance, even he couldn't make out any details about the rider. They slid back down the bank, mounted up, and rode on, looking for some place they could get out of the arroyo. As they came up onto the plain again, they set out after the man who was following Whitfield and the others. Trace slid his Winchester from its saddle boot.
What the hell do you think you're doing? We're not supposed to ambush him. We want to capture him so we can find out who he is and why he's been following us.
Yeah, well, what if he puts up a fight? I ain't in the habit of letting anybody shoot at me without shooting back.
We won't let it come to that.
How do you intend to stop it?
Let's split up. We'll flank him and come in from two directions at once. He'll see that he can't get rid of both of us and surrender.
You hope.
Well, if it doesn't work, we'll deal with that then.
Whatever you say. Any bullets start to fly, though, and all bets are off.
Conrad didn't like the situation any more than Trace did, but for different reasons. Still, there was nothing he could do except go along with the gunmen and hope they could capture the mysterious follower without anyone getting hurt. He angled the buckskin to the right while Trace went to the left. The rider was about a quarter of a mile ahead of him. The sun had just dipped below the western horizon, so the light was starting to fade. Night fell quickly out here. Conrad knew they couldn't afford to waste any time.
Yeah!
Buckskin responded gallantly, stretching out into a gallop, giving it everything he had. Conrad glanced to the left, where Trace had split off a couple of hundred yards, and also pushed his mount into a run. The two of them closed in on the follower. If the man had looked back, he would have seen them, but instead he kept his gaze fixed on the group of riders he'd been trailing all afternoon. That was good. It was more likely they'd be able to take him alive if he didn't notice them until it was too late. In the fading light, he still couldn't see the man very well. As the distance between them narrowed, Conrad veered left to get behind the rider. Finally, when only yards separated them, the man heard hoofbeats and he glanced back. Conrad saw him jerking the saddle as he realized that the hunter had become the hunted. Conrad thought the man might pull a gun and put up a fight, but instead he leaned forward in the saddle and tried to get more speed out of his mount. Conrad looked to Trace and saw that the gunman had his Winchester out again. He waved for Trace to stay back and dug his heels into the buckskin's flanks. The horse responded, spurting ahead to match the increased pace of their quarry. The rider kept looking back. Conrad could tell he was getting frantic. The man's horse didn't have the same speed and stamina as the buckskin. Steadily, Conrad closed the gap. He could see now that the man was dressed in a rough work shirt and trousers, as well as a hat with a broad drooping brim. As far as Conrad could tell, the man wasn't wearing a gun belt. He didn't see a rifle butt sticking up from a saddle sheath either. What sort of fool would come out here in the middle of nowhere unarmed? Maybe the man had a revolver in his saddlebags. Conrad was right behind him, only a few feet away. He debated whether to tackle the man and knock him out of the saddle or just try to grab the reins and bring the horse to a stop. That would be less dangerous. Tackling the man would risk breaking both their necks. Before Conrad could do either one, fate took a hand. The man's horse stumbled and went down, spilling the rider from the saddle and landing hard. Dust billowed into the air and obscured Conrad's vision for a second. He couldn't see what happened to the man. The horse might have rolled over him and crushed him.
Whoa, whoa.
Conrad hauled back on the buckskin's reins. As the big rangy horse skidded to a stop, Conrad swung down. His boots hit the ground while the buckskin was still moving. He turned toward the fallen horse and rider and drew his gun. Between the dust and the fading light, he still couldn't see much. But he wasn't taking any chances. If the rider hadn't been knocked out by the fall, he might have come up with a gun in his hand. Conrad waited, legs slightly spread and gun in hand, for the dust to blow away. As it did so, the fallen man's form became visible. He was sprawled face down on the ground a few yards away. Nearby, his horse struggled upright. The animal didn't appear to be badly hurt, although it might be too lame to ride for a day or two. Something struck Conrad as odd, and as he moved forward and the dust cleared even more, he figured out what it was. The man's hat had fallen off, spilling long, dark hair around his head. It wasn't common to find a man with hair that long these days. And there was something else that didn't seem quite right.
What?
With a shock, Conrad realized what seemed wrong to him. The fallen rider wasn't shaped like a man. Despite the rough work clothes, Conrad could tell that much. The slender waist and the swelling hips belonged to a woman. That explained the long hair, too. Conrad stalked over to the body on the ground and reached down to grasp the woman's shoulder and rolled her onto her back. As he did, her arm came up suddenly and he found himself staring into the barrel of a small pistol about 6 inches from his nose. Even more shocking, he found himself staring into eyes that he knew were deep green, even though their color was hard to make out in the dim light. because those eyes belonged to Pamela Tarleton. For a long moment, Conrad was too surprised to do anything except stand there and stare at Pamela. She seemed equally surprised to see him. Her eyes were wide with shock as she looked up at him.
Conrad?
He noticed that the pistol in her hand was cocked and her finger was taut on the trigger. It wouldn't take much pressure to make the gun go off.
Pamela, if you don't mind, I really wish you'd point that somewhere else.
Oh!
Pamela lowered the gun. She didn't object when Conrad took it from her and eased the hammer back down.
What in blazes? Is that a woman?
It's all right, Trace. She's not dangerous.
You could have fooled me. Looked like she had a gun stuck in your face.
Conrad holstered his Colt and then reached out to help Pamela to her feet. She took his hand.
Oh, what are you doing back here, Conrad? I thought you were up ahead with those other men.
I was, until we realized that someone was following us. Which brings up an even better question. What are you doing out here, Pamela? Dressed like that, following us. I thought you were catching a train back east.
You told me to catch a train back east. I never agreed. As for what I'm doing here, I wanted to be with you, of course.
That's madness. We're on the trail of the men who raided the McTavish Ranch and kidnapped Margaret McTavish. This is no place for
a spoiled Eastern girl? I told you, Conrad, I've changed. I've learned how to look after myself. And I thought you might need help.
I think we can handle this, Pamela. Whitfield brought half a dozen men with him, including Trace here.
But why is Whitfield helping you? I thought he hated the McTavishes.
Well, he does, but he don't like being blamed for something he didn't do. He wants to prove to Browning that he didn't have anything to do with kidnapping the McTavish girl.
Trace is right. So you see, Pamela, we're fine. You shouldn't have followed us.
It's too late to worry about that now, isn't it?
What do you mean?
I mean that we're long away from Val Verde, and night is falling. You can't very well expect me to turn around and ride back to town by myself, can you?
Conrad knew she was right about that. Now that he was aware the person who'd been following them was Pamela, he felt responsible for her. He would have to look out for her. That meant either turning around and taking her back to Val Verde himself, abandoning the hunt for Maggie McTavish, or taking her with him on the trail of a gang of bloodthirsty killers. Luckily, the decision could be postponed, at least until morning.
You'll camp with us tonight. We'll figure out what to do tomorrow.
All right. Let me get my horse.
That horse doesn't need to be ridden after that fall. See, he's limping a little.
The lady can ride with me, Browning.
No, she'll ride with me. You lead her horse.
Conrad swung up into the saddle, then reached down to grasp Pamela's hand and help her climb onto the buckskin's back behind him. She slipped her arms around his waist and hung on tightly as he heeled the horse into motion. Their positions made Conrad acutely aware of how Pamela's breasts were pressed against his back. Even though there were a couple of layers of clothing between them, he couldn't help but think about the firm, warm mounds of flesh. His jaw tightened. He had too much to do to allow himself to be distracted by a woman, no matter how lovely and sensuous she was. And yet, he was still a man, too. Whitfield, James McTavish, and the other men had stopped, Conrad saw, a few minutes later as they approached the spot Whitfield had selected for their camp. He had backed up to a low, rocky bluff with a small pool of water at its base. Probably in years past, Indians had camped there regularly, but all the Indians were on reservations now, so Conrad knew they didn't have to worry about that.
What the Sam hell?
Conrad, Pamela, and Trace rode up to the camp.
That's your lady friend from town, ain't it, Browning?
That's right.
Conrad dismounted, then helped Pamela down from the horse.
This is Miss Tarleton.
Well, what's she doing out here?
I can speak for myself, you know. You're Mr. Whitfield, aren't you?
Habit prompted Whitfield to reach up and remove his hat when Pamela spoke to him.
That's right, Miss. Dave Whitfield.
Mr. Browning and I are old friends. I knew he was going to look for Miss McTavish, so I decided to come along and see if I could help him. I hadn't counted on him joining forces with you men, but that doesn't really change things, does it?
No, I reckon it don't. Why would you think Miss Browning would need your help?
To be honest, Mr. Whitfield, I didn't think Conrad needed to be alone in this situation. I'm sure it brings up too many painful memories for him.
Conrad gritted his teeth. He wished Pamela would just quiet down. That had never been her strong suit, though.
Painful memories of what?
Of the time several months ago when his wife was kidnapped and murdered.
Whitfield looked at Conrad, who stood there with his face stony and expressionless.
Don't reckon I'd heard about that.
That's because it has nothing to do with this. It's in the past. Over and done with.
That was a lie, of course. As long as Anthony Tarleton was alive, it wasn't finished. Not by a long shot. But Conrad had a feeling everything was coming together. Clearly, Whitfield and his men hadn't raided the McTavish Ranch and carried off Meggie. And as far as Conrad could see, only one other group had the slightest reason to have done so. That was Anthony Tarleton, Hogan, Loomis, and the rest of Tarleton's hired killers. It all made sense, assuming that Tarleton had found out somehow about Conrad's connection with the McTavishes. After the ambush at the cemetery failed and Pamela escaped, Tarleton and all the others except Vicente had left Valverde. They could have ridden out to the McTavish spread, wounded Hamish, and kidnapped Meggie, knowing that Conrad would likely follow them if he survived the ambush by Vicente. It was yet one more trap set by Anthony Tarleton, with Meggie as the bait this time instead of Pamela. Ever since the theory had begun to form in Conrad's head, he'd been putting it together piece by piece, and now he was convinced he was right. That explained everything. Why the McTavish Ranch had been raided by someone other than Whitfield in the first place, why the kidnappers had made their trail so easy to follow, why their goal from the start seemed to be to carry off Meggie, not to wipe out the rest of the McTavishes. That was just one more sick, twisted way for Anthony Tarleton to punish him, to put him through hell by kidnapping a young woman who was bound to remind him of what had happened to Rebel.
I'm sorry to hear about it anyway.
Whitfield broke into Conrad's thoughts.
We may not see eye to eye on most things, Browning, but, well, I wouldn't wish something like that on my worst enemy.
I appreciate that. But right now, let's concentrate on the present. We'll have to figure out what to do about Miss Tarleton.
I'm coming with you, of course.
That don't hardly sound safe to me. There's liable to be plenty of gunplay when we catch up to those varmints who carried off the McTavish girl. I wouldn't want my daughter mixed up in something like that. Shoot, I didn't even leave her out at the ranch while we were gone. I told my foreman Ramsey to put her in the buckboard and take her back to town so she can stay in the hotel till I get back.
Perhaps you're too protective of her, Mr. Whitfield. How is she going to know how to take care of herself if something happens to you?
I don't plan on anything happening to me.
Neither did my father. But he died a few years ago, and I was left mostly on my own. I had to learn quickly that the world can be a cruel, frightening place.
We'll talk about it in the morning. There's nothing we can do tonight, anyway.
Conrad turned to Pamela.
Did you bring any supplies?
A few.
We got plenty of food. Don't worry about that. You're welcome to share it with us, Miss Tarleton.
Thank you.
As full darkness settled down over the landscape, one of the men rustled up some supper. The meal was simple: bacon, biscuits, and some canned peaches. But Pamela displayed a hearty appetite as she ate along with the men and washed the food down with strong black coffee. She really has changed, Conrad thought. When he'd been engaged to her, she would have found fault with the finest restaurant. Now she ate on the trail and hunkered next to a campfire without complaint. When everyone had finished eating, Whitfield assigned guard shifts for the night. Conrad and James were willing to take their turn, but Whitfield split up the duties among his own men. Conrad spread his bedroll near the bluff, then turned to face Pamela.
You take the blankets, unless you brought some of your own.
I'm afraid I didn't think about that. I'm sorry. I don't want to take your bed, Conrad. I suppose we could.
No, we can't.
Suit yourself.
He could tell that she was a little annoyed with him. He supposed she had taken his reaction as a rejection, which, of course, it was. He waited until she had rolled up in the blankets, with her back turned pointedly toward him, before he stretched out on the ground nearby with his saddle for a pillow. Even though it hadn't been dark long, a chill had already begun to creep into the air. It would be a cold night. And since he'd be spending it on the hard ground, Conrad didn't expect to sleep very well. Considering that his sleep was often haunted by nightmares under the best of conditions, he assumed the same thing would be true here. The long hours spent in the saddle had taken a toll on him, though. He dropped off to sleep faster than usual. His slumber was deep and dreamless, at least as far as he remembered. The sound sleep actually wasn't what he wanted. He'd planned to doze lightly so that he'd wake up right away in case of any trouble. As Conrad came up off the ground, he was groggy at first, not knowing what was going on or what had happened. Then he heard another soft cry and the sounds of a struggle nearby. He turned toward the bluff. The fire had burned down to embers, and the moon was only a thin sliver in the sky, casting faint illumination. But there were millions of stars in the heavens, and they were so bright in the clear, thin desert air that Conrad could make out the shapes wrestling on the tangled blankets where Pamela had been sleeping.
Son of a...
Conrad leaped toward the struggling figures. He reached down, his fingers brushing the coarse fabric of a man's shirt. He grabbed hold and hauled the man away from Pamela. She scooted back against the bluff. The man Conrad had grabbed twisted around and threw a punch at him. Conrad ducked under it. He slammed a fist into the man's stomach. The man's breath smelled of whiskey as it gusted into Conrad's face. Conrad hit him again, this time a looping left that sent the man flying backward to land on the hard, sandy ground. When he'd first realized what was going on, Conrad expected the man wrestling with Pamela to turn out to be Jack Trace. But he'd been able to tell by the man's thick body that it wasn't the slender gunman. One of Whitfield's other hired killers, then. Conrad didn't care who it was. As the man got to his feet, Conrad quickly walked over and swung with a left. The punch stretched the man out on the ground. A match flared to life. Whitfield clutched a six-gun in his other hand.
What the hell's going on here?
Pamela sat up against the bluff and leveled a shaking finger at the man Conrad had knocked down.
That man crawled into my blankets and tried to...
One of the other men stirred up the fire so that the flames started dancing again. Whitfield dropped the match he'd been holding and strode forward to the man on the ground.
Is that true, Borman? You try to molest Miss Tarleton?
The man sat up and shook his head in an obvious attempt to clear away the cobwebs left behind by the beating Conrad had handed him.
Hell no.
I found you tangled up in her blankets.
Oh, yeah, but she invited me to crawl in with her and mess with her.
That's a lie. I'd never do such a thing.
Conrad glanced at her. She looked horrified.
I think you should give this man his time, Whitfield. He can head back to Valverde in the morning or go wherever else he wants to go.
Yeah. Hate to lose a gun when we don't know for sure what we're riding into, but I can't abide a man who mistreats a woman.
Borland came to his feet.
I'm telling you, I only did what that bitch asked me to do.
I ain't waiting till morning. Gather up your gear and get out of here now, mister. You ain't welcome in this camp.
Borland glared around at all of them, but he didn't find any sympathy in any of their faces, not even Jack Trace's. Conrad figured that much at least was an act. Trace didn't care what happened to Pamela. If he'd believed he could get away with it, he'd have been crawling into her blankets himself. Borland turned and took a step toward Pamela.
Tell him! Tell him it was your idea!
Conrad stepped forward and grabbed Borland's shoulder.
Stay away from her.
Borland jerked free, stepped back, and reached for the gun on his hip, his hand stabbing toward the Colt. Conrad reacted instinctively. Conrad's bullet smashed into Borland's chest and drove him back a step. He collapsed against the bluff.
God damn you! I'll tell the truth! She!
Borland fell lifeless to the ground. Tension gripped the camp. Conrad glanced around, saw that Trace and the other four gunmen had him and Pamela and James surrounded. Borland had been their friend, or at least they'd ridden together. If they decided to avenge him, Conrad wouldn't have much of a chance. Not only that, but Pamela and James would be in danger as well if lead started flying around.
I didn't want to kill him, Whitfield. He didn't give me much choice.
No, I reckon not. At several times you've shown how slick on the draw you are, Brown. I thought you were supposed to be just some rich Eastern dude.
There's more to Browning than that, boss. He really is his father's son, I reckon. And Frank Morgan's a killer.
So's Browning.
Whitfield looked around at his men.
All right. Borland brought this on himself, the damn fool. It's over. Somebody wrap him up in a blanket, and come morning we'll bury him.
Whitfield turned to Pamela.
You all right, miss?
I... I suppose I am.
She started to get up. Conrad used his left hand to take her arm and help her. His right hand still gripped the colt.
I'm sorry about what happened. I hope I didn't do anything to give that man the wrong idea.
No, ma'am, I'm sure you didn't. We'll get him away from you and you can try to get back to sleep.
A couple of the men wrapped Borland's body in a blanket, as Whitfield had instructed, and carried him to the other side of the camp, going far enough so that they were out of the light of the fire. Since the potential for more gunplay seemed to have faded, Conrad holstered his Colt and knelt next to Pamela as she stretched out again.
I'm sorry you had to go through that. I should have been keeping a better eye on you.
You're not my protector, Conrad. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate what you did. But things aren't like they used to be between us. You've made it clear that you don't want them to be that way again.
Conrad grimaced in the darkness. Why couldn't she see that he couldn't go back? Too much time had passed. Too many tragedies had taken place. They weren't the same people they had been when he came to New Mexico territory to build that railroad spur. And yet, wouldn't it be nice to have someone again? Someone with whom he could give and take some comfort? Someone to help stave off the inevitable darkness that was life? Conrad tensed as he caught those thoughts going through his brain. The fact that he had allowed himself to be tempted, even for a second, sickened him. That was the height of disloyalty to his dead wife. Rebel was dead, and nothing would ever change that. Unless he was going to blow his own brains out, he had to go on. He had to find some path so that he could make his way through the rest of his own life. He had dedicated himself to avenging Rebel's murder. But someday soon, he hoped, that task would be accomplished. What then? Conrad asked himself. What then? As usual, he had no answers. Adrift in his thoughts, he finally dozed again, only a few feet from the woman he had once loved.